So right away, there are some executive compensation issues that need to be addressed. What's the right pay level? What's the mix of salary, annual incentive, long-term incentive for the individuals who will be in that role? And of course, the CEO role will get the most attention just given its prominence.
Welcome to the Executive Compensation Podcast. On this show, we discuss all aspects of executive compensation. Whether you're a compensation committee member, a seasoned compensation professional, or just curious to learn more about executive compensation, then this show is the answer. Each episode brings you a focused and actionable interview on specific topics of executive compensation. This episode is brought to you by Meridian Compensation Partners. Meridian works with compensation committees to ensure the most effective processes are in place to go beyond mere compliance with governance requirements and create healthy, dynamic relationships between the board, management, and its advisors. Meridian helps boards use compensation to attract and retain critical talent and to make informed business decisions that will link pay and performance, drive business results, increase shareholder value, and mitigate potential risks. Learn more at meridiancp.com. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Executive Compensation Podcast. Today, we're speaking with Ron Rosenthal and Gerard Leiter all about planning for a spinoff. Ron and Gerard, thank you for joining us today.
Jake, appreciate the opportunity.
To kick things off, Ron, let's dive into level set. When we talk about a spinoff, what exactly do you mean by that?
Thanks, Jake. So just a level set. When we're talking about a spinoff, we're talking about a situation where an existing company, typically a public company, is preparing to carve out or spin off one of its existing businesses. So typically what this situation is, you'll have a company with multiple divisions or businesses that is planning for strategic reasons to separate into two public companies. And so in a typical situation, you'll see them spin one of its businesses into a freestanding, a standalone public company for a variety of reasons. Better management teams, better able to focus on priorities, allocate capital, better valuation from the public markets. But it's essentially taking an existing business and spinning it off into its own standalone company, typically a publicly held company.
So Gerard, when we're developing a project plan for a spinoff, how do you think about dividing up the work over the timeline?
Thanks, Jake. I mean, first off, there's nothing necessarily simple about a spinoff. So upfront, you got to think about this and be very planful. In our experience with clients, we've kind of put it into three different phases. Phase one is kind of the pre-spin initiatives. Really, what is the blueprint or the framework that you're going to be thinking about your compensation matters? So you would address things like compensation philosophy, peer group selection, starting to frame out kind of what happens to the equity and or short-term incentive plan upon the spin. Phase two is specifically thinking about what happens at or near the spin event. So these are more formalization of the forward-going programs, the annual incentive plan, the long-term incentive plan design. Is there a need for a special spin-related equity award? You know, you're going to be bringing on a new board. How are you going to compensate your outside directors? You know, the formal compensation programs for the forward-looking team. You know, you're in the early parts, you'll be doing some benchmarking activities. So you're going to be going from a business segment to a standalone company, understanding the structure of that compensation amount. Those are all important things to be doing in the pre-spin, at-spin type initiatives. You know, in this, you know, near-spin opportunity, you also will just kind of step back, and the planning is also quite critical. So think about things like a comp committee calendar and aligning that with your charter or responsibilities as a committee. Post-spin is the third phase, which is basically happening as the spin event takes place. In this third phase, there's some additional mechanical items, things like general severance, change of control severance, stock ownership guidelines, clawback policies, or to name some of those things that you'll think you're thinking about post the spin event. So very complex topics, issues. An important key takeaway here is think about it kind of in a phased approach. So you can kind of think through those topics in the right way with the committee, the board, and the management.
That's great. And that's super helpful to see it all broken out like that. And so is it typical for SpinCo to replicate the parent company's compensation programs when going through this? Or do they create their own programs that align with its values, vision, and strategy?
Yeah, Jake, there's a mix of practices. I'd say some companies will replicate the parent company programs, at least initially. It really, you know, in part depends on how much time they have to work through the issues. Some will just default to an initial replication of the existing programs, and then over the next 12 to 24 months, work to customize them. But in our consulting experience, I'd say probably a majority of companies will develop a customized programs that best support their pay philosophy, what they're trying to incent with their programs, their new strategy, and the culture that they're trying to adopt at what we'll refer to as SpinCo. And the reason for that is there's usually substantial differences in the remaining business or RemainCo and the new company, SpinCo's businesses, and whether that's strategy, where they are in their business life cycle, what are some key business drivers. And so because the businesses are usually somewhat different or in different phases of the life cycle or have varying strategies, it only makes sense to take a step back and try to create programs, incentive plans in particular, that best support the new company strategy. That said, we do see a combination of approaches. So it might not be a soup to nuts situation where every single compensation program and policy is customized. We do see situations where key programs like the short-term and the long-term incentive plan are customized to best support and fit the new company's strategy, but maybe some other policies and programs are adopted from what we refer to as RemainCo, and then maybe over the next year or two, those adopted policies get examined when it makes sense.
That's super helpful. And so which company's board is typically making decision about SpinCo's programs, at least the initial phases of this?
Yeah, that's a critical, important question. So it's kind of a two-phase approach. If you think about pre-spin, there's a fair amount of activity that takes place, you know, decisions being made for the future organization post-spin. Let me just step back for a second. I think the first thing is typically, you know, what does your future board look like post-SpinCo? And in my experience, there's usually some fairly significant overlap of some of those board members, where some individuals in the pre-existing board will roll over into post-SpinCo, and obviously others will be new to the organization. So I think the idea being is you want to build a foundation that allows the decision-making process to be fundamental, but also allow the flexibility for organization. Now, the reality is you're spinning off the business for a reason. So just replicating the programs doesn't necessarily make the most sense. There's a reason why you're spinning, so you want to make sure these programs make sense go forward. So in that situation, what you're going to find is you want to plan for a smooth transition, and you want to facilitate some of that process between NewCo and SpinCo. Specifically, there are some fundamental issues that you'll start to put in place. I think the number one most important aspect is upon the spin, on the eve of the spin, the existing company should approve the equity plan going forward. This is the omnibus plan, the share pool that you're going to need for equity of the future organization. The reality is, as the large shareholder at the time on the eve of the spin, they have the authority to approve that. And doing that will be critical to allow you to offer future success relative to most of your incentive plans going forward. So again, it's a little bit of a mixed review, but again, the appropriate planning will allow for that clean transition where there is a fair amount of, you know, pre-spin work that should be done around the blueprints of the programs and the fundamentals there going forward.
Yeah, and typically pre-spin, it's still parent company's compensation committee that's handling the formal approvals of the new programs and all the key executive compensation decisions that have to get approved. And then once the spin-off or the transaction occurs, then the new company's board and compensation committee have authority, and they usually step in and start making decisions going forward. So initially, the team is working with the existing company's compensation committee while the new board's being developed. So that as you get closer to the spin date, there's some interactions with the new compensation committee, but the formal approval rights still usually reside with parent co until the spin.
As the management team of parent co and spin co begin to plan for day one, what are some of the things that they should be considering?
Yeah, so this is what Gerard was referring to as kind of the pre-spin checklist, you know, the key items that really need to be addressed early on in order to set yourself up for success in preparing for day one or the day of the transaction. So first and foremost, as a foundational item, you know, we would typically suggest taking a step back and thinking about what the pay philosophy ought to be, the philosophy that will kind of set the foundation for future executive compensation decisions. That might involve some discussions with key stakeholders, the new leadership team, any members of the new compensation committee that may have been identified at that point in time. But really, the first step is establishing the pay philosophy. Then, of course, from a practical standpoint, the management team of parent co or remain co will work along with the board to identify the leadership team of the new company. That could be a mix of current employees at parent company and maybe some outside hires. But identifying who will run that business is obviously a key initial step. And once those decisions have been made, what goes hand in hand with that decision, those decisions are developing, you know, appropriate and competitive pay arrangements and offer letters to offer the positions to those individuals. And so right away, there are some executive compensation issues that need to be addressed. What's the right pay level? What's the mix of salary, annual incentive, long-term incentive for the individuals who will be in that role? And of course, the CEO role will get the most attention just given its prominence. And then as Gerard mentioned early on, it's really important to develop kind of that project plan, that list of key activities of, and a work plan to guide the team through that process, and also forming a working group, because this will take people from HR, from legal, from finance to really work together, and probably people from both Parent Co and Spin Co to work together within those functions to achieve all the items that need to be addressed prior to spin. And a couple other items that are really important. One, just foundational, is you'll want to benchmark pay levels, understand the marketplace for the new company. So developing a benchmarking peer group that can be used to provide that market perspective for management and the compensation committee is really helpful. And then, you know, as part of developing those initial offers for the management team, understanding what the market level of pay is for those jobs. And then another item, which we'll address in more detail, that needs to be on the list early on is addressing how the transaction will affect outstanding long-term incentive awards. So stock options, restricted stock units, and performance shares, all those will be impacted by any kind of transaction or the spinoff. And so planning early on, evaluating alternatives, and considering how to address those significant items is an important task.
It's great. And so what would the benchmarking peer group be used for, at least initially?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So, you know, the objective here behind a benchmarking peer group is to build an understanding as to what is market practice. What is the market for talent? And really, this is an opportunity for management and the board and the committee to understand what is competitive in the environment they're about to move into. So you think about it, it has two phases to it. One is, you know, what is competitive levels of pay or opportunities as you move from a division of organization to standalone organization, standalone CEO, CFO, top legal, so forth. So what is the competitive levels of pay, base, bonus, long-term? And then secondly, to understand kind of what is typical pay practice design. So what is typical in that industry, that sector, relative to a short-term incentive annual bonus plan? What type of metrics do you have? What is the balance between financial and non-financial? Recently, the big discussions around ESG metrics and how does that fit into the design of your program? So really the objective behind the benchmarking activities is to build that market background understanding, and then customize it relative to what's right for you as an organization. So one of the approaches we want to make sure is that we're making educated, informed decisions. So this benchmarking activity allows you to understand broadly across what's out in the marketplace and how you would stack up. Now, being different isn't a problem, just knowing where the differences are, so you can articulate what's right for you as an organization. So that benchmarking activity builds that foundation of understanding what is market and where you want to differentiate and how you want to customize your plans.
That's great. And so why is it important to conduct a market-based assessment of pay levels for the executive leadership team?
Yeah, just a few key reasons. First, as Gerard mentioned, it allows the management team and the compensation committee to understand what competitive pay levels are for these positions. I mean, these are new, larger roles for those that are getting promoted from a division-level responsibility to a corporate-level responsibility. And so understanding what the market is for those jobs is helpful as the compensation committee or management is developing those offers. It helps them understand what the market is and ensure that the pay levels are competitive and appropriate and also supportable. And it also allows the committee to make decisions that are consistent with its pay philosophy, where they might target pay at a certain level of the market. And so having that reference as background enables them to make decisions that are consistent with that philosophy. And then finally, from a legal perspective, also just creates a good record to have from a corporate governance standpoint as support for those pay decisions.
Great. And so how do companies deal with outstanding short-term incentives in the connection with a spinoff?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways to think about this. So if you think about it, you step back, the timing of the spin has a critical pivot point on how you treat the annual bonus plan. So you have RemainCo's annual bonus plan, and you have SpinCo's future annual bonus plan. And the timing will impact how some of that treatment. But more or less, you have some decisions that need to be made specifically around the annual bonus plan. So depending on the impact of the transaction, that may impact the ability to project out or make some assumptions relative to adjustments and so forth on the annual bonus plan for RemainCo. And post-SpinCo, you may have a stub period of time you need to think about how you want to handle that. So does that stub period, if it's in the middle of the fiscal year, act on its own, or do you roll a portion of that bonus treatment into the future SpinCo's annual bonus plan where you have an extended annual bonus plan that may be 14 months long in length and so forth? The reality is how the bonus is being treated. There's requirements around the existing SpinCo's plan documents, and there's ability to have some discretion there. I think, importantly, the timing of that will drive a lot of the decision-making process. Recognize you have a lot of moving parts. So you want to keep things simple. You want to keep things very clearly understood by the participants to motivate that talent in the right way.
That's great. And so we were just talking about short-term incentives, but definitely also curious about long-term incentives, which seem even more complicated. And so, you know, what about long-term incentive awards? You know, what approaches are available for companies with converting these?
Yeah, so this is one of the more important issues to tackle in connection with a spinoff, because typically you'll have, if you think about it, companies usually make grants annually with multi-year vesting periods. So you'll likely have several years of long-term incentive awards that are outstanding at the time of the spinoff. And so companies that are going through this type of transaction need to consider how the spin will actually affect those awards. Now, the long-term incentive plan will have existing provisions that provide for equitable treatment of the awards, but there are some decisions to be made about how you actually implement those adjustments. And so some of the key issues, you know, that companies want to think about is, you know, and what drives the decisions. Obviously, they want to treat everybody equitably. They want to consider what's the right alignment for employees post-spin. And just as an example of that, you know, prior to the spin, all the employees have equity awards that are tied to parent co performance. One of the decisions companies will need to make post-spin is, do you follow what's called the employer approach, where your equity awards are converted into awards of your employer, or do you follow the shareholder approach, which is, you know, as any shareholder would following a spinoff, would the employees have equity awards both in RemainCo, the prior company, and SpinCo, just like any shareholder would, or do you follow the employer approach? So I'm jumping ahead, but the two alternatives, really there's three, is you take the shareholder approach and you treat the employees or the participants just like you would a shareholder. So they end up with equity awards in both companies. You can follow the employer approach where their equity awards convert as appropriate into awards of either their new employer or their existing employer, or you do some hybrid of the two. And where I've seen the hybrid used, it's sometimes, you know, for, you know, awards that don't have much time left, you might treat them differently than awards that just started. But those really are the three alternatives: shareholder approach, employer approach, or some hybrid of the two. And there's other issues to tackle. You know, one of the big ones that often gets a lot of consideration is how you value the equity awards immediately before and immediately after the spinoff. One of the considerations to tackle is, do you use, you know, the closing price to value the equity awards that you're converting? Do you use some kind of multi-day average price? And similarly, after the spinoff, do you use the opening price of the SpinCo, or do you wait to see how it trades for a few days? That's a big issue to tackle. There's obviously accounting implications and tax implications that come into play, but really determining how you value those equity awards and what stock price or stock prices you're going to use to value the equity awards is a significant issue that requires time and an understanding of all the pros and the cons. But there's a few issues. How do you want to align your employees post-spin? What alternative do you want to follow for converting equity awards? How do you value those equity awards to make that conversion? And then as you dive even deeper, any time-based award is pretty easy to convert. You know, you have time-based awards pre-spin and you have time-based awards post-spin. But when you have performance awards, like a performance share, where vesting itself is tied to a pre-established performance condition, that needs some work as well to figure out how this transaction will end up affecting that award. For example, if you're using financial metrics, let's say you set a three-year goal and vesting was tied to a three-year goal, and now you're 18 months into the cycle and the company is breaking into two distinct separate companies, well, in all likelihood, the goals you set 18 months ago won't really apply to the new entity, whether the employees with SpinCo, certainly won't if they're with SpinCo, and probably won't if they're with RemainCo. So often you need to decide how to deal with those types of awards. And it may differ by where you are in the cycle. The treatment, that is, may differ by where the company is in that cycle. If there's only a few months left to go, you might just truncate the period and see where and evaluate performance through the date of the spin. But if there's a long ways to go, you might look at alternatives for either resetting the goals or maybe breaking into breaking it into two distinct performance periods. So depending on the type of the award, there's also more work to do given the impact of the spin on the kind of the continued workability of those grants.
That's great. And so how will SpinCo make equity grants to its employees? You know, what plan governs those awards?
Yeah, there's a very critical part here. I mean, for SpinCo to grant equity, they're going to need a new omnibus plan. And that omnibus plan will allow them to grant equity to employees and outside directors. So I think the important aspect here is upon spin, you need to basically adopt a new modern plan that would allow NewCo to grant equity on a go-forward basis to their directors and executives. To satisfy that need, you will need shareholder approval. You know, the prominent practice has become is on the eve of the spin, ParentCo's board will approve the equity plan. Obviously, there's a fair amount of modeling and analysis that needs to be done to understand the parameters of that. So you will need to go through an exercise where you look at, you know, the conversion of equity and how much equity is being used up in the new future plans upon that conversion, should it go against that share pool. The management team and the employees that will be eligible for equity. So you'll be modeling out kind of future equity needs for the organization. You know, again, those factors will go into play to estimate, you know, what's reasonable, what's fair to ask for those shares. And the parent company typically would approve that on the eve of the spin, so that on day one, you're in a situation that you can grant equity, whether it be, you know, part of the annual grant that comes right after the spin or special equity grants that are part of the spin as a motivation factor to drive and motivate talent.
Great. And so what are some of the key issues to address when designing a new annual incentive plan?
Yeah. So, you know, the annual incentive plan, in my mind, is the first major critical incentive plan that's going to pay out upon spin. What you're going to find is, as an organization, you need to step back, understand what needs to change as an organization, or what factors do you want to motivate. So this is a chance to put in an incentive plan that will align with the future designs that are appropriate for the new business. You'll be looking at such factors as, you know, what type of financial metrics and goals you'll set. Do we need to have non-financial goals? So there's going to be a lot of, you know, new company activities. Should those be part of the incentive plans will be an issue they'll need to talk about. But as an organization, you'll think about the weightings between certain financial metrics and non-financial metrics. You'll look at the, you know, the role of individual performance. Should that be part of the annual incentive design going forward? Where I see most of the focus and struggle for most organizations around the goal setting process. So as a new organization, we identify certain financial metrics that we're going to use to measure our success. How do you set targets? How do you set goals? Threshold, target, maximum, payout opportunities related to those financial metrics from a relatively new organization. So, you know, the slopes and the payout curves will all be important as you think about the incentive plans and how you drive the behaviors through that short-term plan over the next 12 months as a new organization as part of the annual bonus plan.
That's great. And so, you know, Ron, what are some of the key issues to address when looking at a long-term incentive program?
Yeah. So at the same time that that NewCo is thinking about its how to design an annual plan that best supports its strategy, it also ought to be considering how the long-term incentive plan will be designed and how that best can support their long-term strategy. So as with any long-term incentive design project, you know, there's a number of issues that need to be considered. What's the right mix of awards? In other words, are you going to grant one type of award, or are you going to grant a combination of award types, whether that's stock options, time-based restricted stock or stock units, or what role does performance vested shares or performance shares play in the mix? Typically, that's at least the majority. And we do see companies use a mix of awards for long-term incentives. So what is that? What is the right mix out of the gate for SpinCo? And what's the weighting of those awards, right? First, you have to decide which awards you're granting and how much weight do you want to place on each one. Typically, the performance shares is at least the majority, but that overall weighting needs to be established along with the vesting periods and the performance periods for performance shares. So, you know, what's the vesting period over which those grants will vest? Somewhere between 3 and 5 years, typically. And then there's a whole separate project of looking at what the performance share, or considering what the performance share design ought to be. So just like the annual incentive plan, what are the key metrics that are aligned with the business strategy and shareholder value creation and or ESG metrics? Do you want to use absolute performance or relative performance versus other like companies, perhaps in your industry? Again, what's the weighting of those metrics? You know, if you're using more than one metric, what's the relative weight of those? And then just as Gerard mentioned, setting the goals, figuring out what the maximum and threshold payouts are, and establishing the payout curve, the slope of that payout curve, how steep or flat it's going to be, what are the right entry points. And then another issue that Gerard alluded to in his discussion about the new equity plan is in some cases, companies will elect to make a special one-time equity grant in connection with the spinoff. And so that's another issue that needs to be at least thought about. It's not universal. It may make sense for some companies, it might not for others, but at least it's something that should be on the list of issues to consider, whether a launch grant or some type of special award to support the spinoff is sensible in this case.
Great. And Gerard, you know, what about outside director pay? As companies recruit new directors to the board, don't they need to have a pay program in place for them as well?
Yes, definitely. So I think you're going to find that, you know, SpinCo will be in the process of recruiting new board members or outside directors. There may be some overlap from parent co's board or in addition to new members from the outside. In some situations, they can adopt parent co's director pay. I would encourage most organizations to step back for a minute and say, okay, what's competitive? So a market assessment is probably appropriate to reassess kind of not only the levels of pay, but also the design of pay in terms of the mix between, you know, cash and equity and evaluating kind of those levels and opportunities and vehicles. You know, in general, director pay has become a little bit more simpler in today's environment, but I think there's an opportunity to kind of hit the reset button and again, assess what's appropriate, you know, from a size, level, and design perspective. So, you know, you'll look at things like stock ownership guidelines. You'll look at the levels of cash and equity. You look at member fees and retainer fees. All those are important aspects, but you got to right size it for the organization of the spin. So again, yes, you should definitely look at that as you prepare day one of the spin go.
That's great. Are there any other important compensation matters that need to be addressed in those first 12 months?
There are a few that we haven't touched on yet. These are the ones that we would probably place in our kind of post-spin category. They're important to have as a public company. They're important issues to address, but they're not the ones that you're going to tackle early on in the process. So as an example, having an executive severance plan that provides benefits that covers executives in the event of a change of control is something as a new public company that you'll probably want to have just as general protection and maybe even in non-change of control situations. But then thinking about some of the compensation governance policies that stakeholders, institutional investors, proxy advisors will be looking for when SpinCo files its first proxy statement as a standalone company. So thinking about stock ownership guidelines for the executives and the directors, adopting a clawback or recoupment policy, having anti-hedging and pledging policy in place as part of your insider trading policy, thinking about the risk assessment that the compensation committee needs to review prior to filing the first proxy statement. And to that end, not waiting too long to draft the initial compensation discussion and analysis section of the proxy statement that the committee will have to sign off on before it's included in the first proxy statement. And then finally, as a new public company, they'll be subject to what we refer to as say on pay, so the non-binding advisory vote on executive pay. And as part of that new process, every company has to determine how frequently they'll have that vote. Usually it's annually, but it's something on the list that they have to tackle at the first annual meeting. And then one other thing that Gerard mentioned is early on is just develop for the compensation committee, developing that calendar of activities over the course of the year, that plan for handling all the governance items that the committee is responsible for. The more you lay it out up front, the easier it is to kind of tackle those items on a regular basis throughout the course of the year.
That's great. And so as we wrap up here, any other final thoughts or issues to be aware of?
Yeah, a couple things to think about. I think first and foremost, you got to be planful. Whether you have 6 weeks or 6 months, take advantage of the timeline. And as you make decisions, I would strongly suggest a two-step process. Step one is to educate decision makers around what is common practice and design. And step two is to basically then approve it. This allows some ample time to vet the topics and discussions and get to the right answer as an organization. And lastly, I would encourage you as an organization not to just to Xerox the parent company's design. This is a chance for you to step back, modernize and customize the programs for the right for the business going forward.
That's great. Ron, any other final thoughts from your side?
Yeah, I think those are excellent comments. The only other thing I'd add, just to echo what Gerard said, there's a lot to accomplish in the 6, 9, 12-month period, whatever it turns out to be. But the more you're planful about the process, developing the working group, laying out an approach, clearly identifying what should be tackled pre-spin, at-spin, post-spin, the better off you'll be for tackling those items. And by doing it in an orderly manner, the management team will give itself, and importantly, the compensation committee, ample time to consider these important issues and end up with good results and good decisions.
Perfect. Ron, Gerard, thank you both for taking the time on this. This was phenomenal.
Appreciate the time. Thanks again, Jake.
Thank you, Jake.
This episode is brought to you by Meridian Compensation Partners. Meridian works with compensation committees to ensure the most effective processes are in place to go beyond mere compliance with governance requirements and create healthy, dynamic relationships between the board, management, and its advisors. Meridian helps boards use compensation to attract and retain critical talent and to make informed business decisions that will link pay and performance, drive business results, increase shareholder value, and mitigate potential risks. Learn more at meridiancp.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Executive Compensation Podcast. You can see more about this episode along with additional executive compensation insights at meridiancp.com. That's Meridian, the letter C and the letter P.com.